Hi, everybody. My name is Jana Brown, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm human, so I'm a little nervous, but I'm totally relying on God up here. I have a sobriety date. It's March 27th, 2021. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other women, and I have a home group in Richmond. It's called Into Action. If you're ever in the Richmond area, get my number before I leave and come visit us. We meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 o'clock. We break up into three different groups on Tuesdays. We have a newcomers meeting, a closed big book study, and a closed discussion. And then on Thursdays, we have our open speaker meeting. So hopefully tonight I'm going to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, which is a total 180 of difference. And hopefully along the way, it'll be clear how I was able to establish a relationship with God, which is a result of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship in the 12 steps. So I was born in Mechanicsville, Virginia. So it's a small town right outside of Richmond. I had a mom and a dad of loving parents who worked really hard. I had a older sister and an older brother. My sister was 3 years older than me. My brother was about 13 months older than me. And my mom was the director of the daycare. My dad worked really hard, and we ran everything. We ran that daycare. My brother was the starting quarterback on all the teams that he played on, starting outfielder, and I was the sports star as well. I played basketball. I was the starting point guard, the high scorer. My sister was the cheerleader. She was the prettiest girl in school. And we had a lot of friends, and we were always, hanging out at our houses. You know, on the first day of school, we were always set up with everything we needed. We had the new shoes and the book bags and the fresh outfits. And my parents did a really good job of showing us love and teaching us right from wrong. And so when I was 13, I want to say I was never a really shy kid. I wasn't shy. I was outgoing, but I had a fear. I was very competitive, and I had this fear of needing to be better than everybody else. I couldn't just be one amongst others. Like I always had to one up you. And when I was 13, I had my first drink of alcohol, and my parents, they were throwing a New Year's Eve party, and me and my buddy, we knew that my sister was going to be partying with her friends, and I had my friends over, and my brother had some of his friends over, and I knew that the older kids were going to be drinking, and I knew that my sister had a vodka bottle hid under her bed. So when the moment presented itself, me and my friend had planned, we basically army crawled under the bed. We grabbed that bottle of vodka, we took the top off, and we started chugging it. And for a very short moment, all of that fear of needing to be better than everybody else and needing to be the prettiest girl in school or the most athletic and number one, went away. I didn't care about that anymore. The drink did something to and for me. It gave me effect produced that I fell in love with, and everything else in my life eventually I put aside to chase that effect produced. And I ended up getting into a lot of trouble. I got really sick. I threw up. I in front of all of my friends, vomited and threw up, and my mom comes banging on the door, and I jump in my throw up to try to hide it from her, and just a total mess, right? I'm just hanging out my window, doing other things out my window, and it was just ended up being a disaster. That was my first experience with drinking, but like I said, for that short amount of time, all of that fear went away, and the next morning I was really sick, and I look back on this moment and I think that any other 13-year-old would have experienced this. They They might have thought, hey, maybe this isn't a very good idea. Everybody at school was talking about how hot of a mess I was on New Year's Eve, but very shortly, I couldn't wait to do it again. And so at, in eighth grade, I'm starting to live for the weekends to get together with my friends and a lot of my parents. I'm that kid that's telling your mom you're going to the movie theater, getting dropped off there, and then getting scooped up by somebody, or just asking a random person that's older to take me with them to go buy alcohol, and just very sneaky, dishonest, selfish behavior. And continued to do that. By the time the end of my eighth grade year, I was got was getting busted by cops. I was drinking on another school's campus and got in trouble. And I can remember being in the in-school suspension room on eighth grade day, and all of the other eighth graders were at the picnic, and I was in ISS because I had just got in trouble drinking on campus and got suspended for 5 days and 5 days in. And I can remember being in detention and looking at all the other kids having a good time on their last day of eighth grade. And I didn't even care at that point, because like they were rookies and I had found alcohol and I was partying with the older other kids, and I didn't care. So I continued on through high school, the same behavior. It gradually just it was getting worse. By the time I was in ninth, 10th grade, I'm doing things like skipping school and going home and taking all of the beer out of my mom's fridge and drinking that. And I actually, with a buddy of mine, when we skipped school, like this was the kind of behavior that I was doing. We came home and we skipped school, drank all of the booze that was in the house, and then we staged the house like somebody had broken in. And then when the cops came, I helped my mom and the police try to find who broke into our house. Like that's what I was doing at in ninth and 10th grade. And I kind of was able to get it together a little bit because I was really involved in sports, and I had some coaches that really worked really hard to get me through school and to do well and be able to graduate. So I was able, and at that point, to kind of I could do the sports things, and I was able to make it through high school some way somehow. But in that times in high school, I'm already like trying to just drink beer and not liquor. I'm already trying to control the drinking, and I'm already like just always lying to my parents, always lying and being dishonest and super super selfish. So I graduated from high school, and my parents were I was going to go to Methodist University in North Carolina in Fayetteville to play basketball. And they thought that that was a great idea because it was supposed to be a dry campus. You were required to take religious classes, and I was going to be involved in basketball. So they thought that I was going to, do better. Maybe this was my big chance to go out and be better. Maybe grow up some. But that just wasn't the case. I went to Methodist, and what I ended up doing was drinking and failing all my other classes. Passing my religion classes was the only class that I actually did pass. And then wrecking my mom's car while I was down there. I got a DUI, the star soccer player in my passenger seat. And the last semester I was there, my parents were like, we're not sending you there anymore. We're paying a lot of money for you to go out of state to a private school, and ended up pulling me back home. And I got home and I'm 20 years old and I can't hold a job. I can't show up. I can't do anything, and my drinking's just getting worse, and it's just continually to get worse. And just my life was almost like just a series of events where my family would just they would just take me, and it was just fixed Jana, like somebody please help her. I was always just such a burden and such a problem. And so I come home and I end up getting really wasted off Everclear one night and blacked out and burned my arm really bad. I literally don't even know like what happened. That's how blacked out I was. And I woke up that next morning and my parents were like, you have some options. You can either stay here and live here, and you're gonna have to go to church every Sunday, and you're gonna have to attend Alcoholics well, AA for, three, four times a week, or you can't live here anymore. So I said, okay, I'll go to AA and I'll do the church thing. And I was 20 years old when I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Mechanicsville. And I went to AA, and just I hear people talk about this all the time, and it's not a shocker. I didn't get a sponsor, I didn't get a home group, I didn't work any steps. I didn't do anything that the people were suggesting for me to do, and I wasn't able to stay sober. I can remember celebrating my 21st birthday. I'd been going to AA for about 6 months, and on my 21st birthday, my family had rented this place at Italian Kitchen. They did this big slideshow of like my life and like all the happy moments in my life, and they played the Carrie Underwood song, "I Don't Want to Spend My Life Wasted," and it's like all of my family there, and it was just like, man, like my life is so over, and it was just so not cool. So that's where I was at. That's where I was at with that. And for a little bit of that time, I was able, and I say this because I work with a lot of girls that don't just have an alcohol problem, that they do other things. And for periods of time, I was able to set the drink aside. But I was only able to do that by taking a lot of Adderall or a lot of Xanax in that moment. And if I had that, I was able to not drink. And a lot of times that was acceptable to my family around me, because at least I wasn't drunk, because I was such a bad drunk. And so as the t time rolls on, I'm 24 at this moment, and I tell this story because it's really important. At this time, I was 24, and I was at my house, and I walked out into my front yard, and my father, who I was very close to, who's my very best friend, was laying on his back after cutting the grass, and had a heart attack and passed away. And I say that because it's not like, poor me, or this is why I continued to drink. I say that because in that moment, it severed any kind of relationship that I previously had with God. Like, I grew up with a fundamental idea of God. Like, we went to church. He wasn't very personal to me, but I believed in God. And then when that happened to my father, I walked away from God that day. It severed any kind of relationship or thought I had about God. Now, I might believe that we talked about this weekend with Susie. I might believe that that God might be personal and good for you and be able to guide and give you strength, but he certainly didn't love me, because if he did, he would have never let that happen to me. So it was okay for everybody else to believe him, but that just wasn't the case for me, and I would get irritated when anybody would try to push that on me. So over time, I end up getting married. I met my husband, who's my husband today, and we ended up getting married, and I had a child, and I have this child, and I can't stay sober. And it's like I said, it's just always getting worse. And I was at home one day, and I had been drinking, and my husband was at work. And I had put my daughter in a wagon to go down to the pond in the neighborhood. And she I was just completely wasted, and took her down to the pond. And at some point, I turned my back to light up a cigarette, or I don't even know what I was doing. And then the wagon started to roll down a hill. And it ended up going down to the hill and crashing into a rock, and the wagon ended up flipping over, and my daughter's face got really bruised. I mean, I really could have done a lot of damage to her. I could have killed her. And I can remember just coming to on my couch and having a text message from my husband with a picture of my daughter and her face. And he was just like, "How could you do this to me?" And at this point, like I said, I was so bad. Like, there was times when I would get checked into to inpatient, and I would do outpatient, and I would, intense therapy, all of these things that I was trying to do to try to get sober, and I just couldn't. And there was times when I wanted to, But I was always going back out, and the book explains it as a mental blank spot, and none of these other consequences that were happening to me were ever going to be sufficient enough for me to be able to stop. And it was, like I said, just always a series of events, like somebody please help her. And finally, after that incident with my daughter, my cousin, and my family got together. It was another mini intervention of lots of those with my family and me. And she pointed at me, and she was like, "Well, what is wrong with you? Don't mess with me. Like, what is going on?" And I told her, her guess why I was drinking was as good as mine. And I couldn't, as bad as I wanted to, I couldn't not drink. And then once I started, I couldn't stop. And the book describes that as the physical allergy when you can't stop. So after this intervention, she puts me in her van, and she says, "I'm taking you to AA." And she said, "And I'm not letting you back in." At this point, I didn't have a license. She said, "At this, I'm not picking you back up until you get a sponsor." So she dropped me off at an AA meeting in town, and I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and she said yes, and I ended up getting a ride home. But I look back and I think, man, maybe I just wanted a ride home more than a sponsor at that point. So this woman sat me down in front of her kitchen table, and she told me her story, and she was really bad, and she had done all of the things that I had done, and probably even worse. And I was so attracted to it. I was so attracted to it. I didn't understand how she was able to stay sober. And I ended up wait just what she would start to take me through the steps, and she would read to me, and it was just, it was almost like I just had one foot in and one foot out. It didn't work. I wasn't all the way in. I wasn't able to stay sober. But I knew that there was a solution out there. And when she had took a chance on me and gave me a job, and I was working with her one day, which I don't suggest giving an alcoholic a job, because I would show up sideways, I would lie, I would steal. Those were the type of things that I did to this person in AA that had offered me a job. So I was just so sick. And one day we were riding to Charlottesville for work, and she was like, "Girl, I don't know what to do with you." She said, "I here's Susie Donahue's number. Why don't you call her?" And I was like, "Ask her to sponsor you." Because at this point, she was done. She's like, "I can't sponsor you anymore. I'm done." So I went home that day, and I went into my bedroom, and it was just me and God. And I had a moment of clarity. I wanted, for the first time in my life, I sincerely, wholeheartedly, I wanted to change. And I had nobody on my back. My husband hadn't locked me out of my house. My mom wasn't dropping me off an AA meeting. I had no demands to meet. Everybody was done. And my mom at this point had written me off as a sociopath. Like, she didn't want anything to do with me. It was just me and God in that room. Nobody was forcing my hand to pick up this phone and call this woman. But I did it anyways. And the best decision I ever made in my entire life. I picked up the phone, and then I called her in my room by myself, and I asked her if she would help me. And she said yes. And she lived in North Carolina. And so she's about 2.5 hours from me. And she said yes, that she would. And she asked me three questions immediately. And she asked me, "Are you done?" And I said, "Yes, I'm done." And she asked me if I would be willing to believe in a power greater than myself. And I said, "Yes." And this is the kicker. And then she asked me if I'd be willing to go to Annie Links and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, "Yes." And we've just been going full throttle ever since. And she started to take me through the steps. And just immediately, she said, "We're going to meet 3 times a week." She said, "Don't you mess with me. There's a lot of women I can help. Don't you waste my time." And she started to spend time with me three times a week on the phone through FaceTime. She had me write out my first step. I mean, she ripped me through these steps and she made me write out my first step, and she pointed out the physical allergy, the mental blank spot, and how consequences were never going to be sufficient enough to keep me sober. And I did that first step, and then she asked me if I, believe to believe. And at that moment, I didn't even know if I did believe. I said yes, but I believed that she believed. I mean, she did. She believed, and I believed in her, and I believed in what we were doing. I really believed in her. And we knelt on phone, and we did that third step prayer, and I started hitting my knees every single morning and every single night. I would just tell God, I would just say to God in this prayer, I wrote it down on a note card and put it by my bed. And it comes from, we read it this weekend from my Southern friend and one of the stories in the book. And I would just say, God, I make really big messes of things and there's nothing I can do about it. Have me, take me, all of me, and do whatever you want with me. I would say that morning and night. And then as soon as I hit my knees into that third step prayer with her, I immediately picked up a pen and started writing my inventory. As I started writing my inventory, and I had these people in my inventory that I was really upset about that I felt had hurt me and wronged me, I wrote their names on a note card, and I started seeing that sick man's prayer in the big book for immediately as I was doing my inventory, I was already starting to pray for the people, the sick man's prayer that was on my inventory. And man, it was tough doing that inventory. I felt so sick. I was so disgusted with my behavior and how I treated the people that had ultimately loved me and gave their hearts and everything to me. And I would just spit in their face over and over again. And I would have never been able to see that if it wasn't for that inventory. It was a shift in perspective for me. It was powerful. And I can remember being at work, and I called her and I said, I just really don't feel good. And she said, I said, yeah, I was doing this inventory and I was just about done. And that was March. So by April, and this was a complete stranger that I was doing all this with. I didn't know her, but I didn't care. I wanted to change. I got in my car in April after I'd written that inventory. It had only been a month, and I immediately went down there, and I can remember staying at her house that night. And talking with her, she took me to her home group. There's a solution in North Carolina. We went there, best meeting I've ever been to. And I slept on her couch that night, and I woke up that morning, and I did my fifth step with her. And man, she held nothing back. She told me exactly who I was and what I was doing. I mean, I'm not gonna cuss at the podium. But you can only imagine the language that she used when I was telling her about all these things that I did. And I mean, at one point, she said, you better sew your hands to your pants because you're never going to steal from anybody ever again. That's putting it lightly. And I mean, it was just at one point, I always, when I think about this experience, I think about in the middle of it. I mean, at one point when we were going through it, I felt myself lift out of my body and onto her couch. Like I died. A big, really, really big piece of Jana died that day. And I feel like that was a result of the steps. I was dying of self. And we immediately after that, we did 6, 7, and 8. I had my eight from my fourth that I needed to make amends to. We prayed, and I can remember doing the seven step prayer, like, is this really gonna work? And she was like, yeah, you've been doing Alcoholics Anonymous in China, like, it's gonna work. She's like, as long as you go out and help others, if you do God's bidding. And at this point, I had already started to do that. I was going up to the healing place that just opened in Richmond, and that same van that my cousin dropped me off in, my husband ended up buying for, and it became my car when I got my license back. And I drive up to the healing place, and I'd give all these girls phone numbers that were in long-term treatment, and I'd say, please call me. And I couldn't wait for the call. And I picked them up, and it ended up being that my home group was like 10 minutes from the healing place, and I could get these girls in my van, and I could take them to my home group with me. And I was just so excited that I had, like the book says, a new employer that I was able to work for that I could actually be useful for too. And I was so excited and eager to do it. And so I was doing these things already as it was suggested to me to do from her. And when other people in Alcoholics Anonymous were speaking, I'd want to go and support them, and just things like that. I'd left that meeting in Mechanicsville that I'd been going to previously in AA, and joined a real Three Legacy home group where there was people were going out and doing service. They were going to the corrections, they were going to the jails, they were going to the treatment centers, and I immediately got a part of that and joined the newcomers committee, and just really excited. And so I came back, like I said, I came back from dropping my fifth and doing 6, 7, and 8 from North Carolina. I had a little over a month, and I came home, and she gave me a list of, she said, we're going to do, there were three amends at once, three amends a week. And she said, we'll do an easy one, and then we'll do a kind of easy one, and then we'll do a really hard one in a week. And I was like, okay. And I can remember riding back to Richmond from Apex, and this girl that was on my resentment list called me, and I really didn't like this girl, man. She had gotten sober and like the first time around, and everybody thought she had this great recovery, and I just didn't see it. And she was on my list, and she called me on my way back and asked me if I wanted to come over. She was going to cook dinner, and she had actually then sent me a text message. Then I called my spouse. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? And she's like, you're gonna go. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah. She's like, not only are you gonna go, but you're gonna bring candle and some cheesecake to her and bring something to the table. And I was like, but I'm just getting home. Like, I've got a family. Like, I can't just go ahead and leave them again. And she's like, no, you're gonna do it. You're gonna do it. So sure enough, I did. But it taught me a big lesson that day, because it taught me to take action contrary to what I felt like doing. I didn't want to go, but I did it anyways, and it did taught me a big lesson. I mean, I really didn't want to go see this girl. We're still not the best of friends, but I was kind, and we had a good time during dinner. And so I came back, and like I said, I immediately started to set out to make my amends. And I went to a friend that I had owed amends to, and we had dinner together. And I had took took I always talked to my sponsor first. I took a note card with me, and I listed, she taught me to never say I'm sorry. I was wrong, and then I would go on my card. I'd have my defects that I displayed. I was selfish, I was unkind, I was dishonest. This is what I did. And then what I would ask them to do, I hope that you can eventually see a change in me, and is there anything else that I've left out? And I did that with one friend, and that friendship has so blossomed since. We're so tight. She's my running buddy in AA. And after that, I would do it, did another kind of hard one, and then I went to my employer. I waited tables at Sunset Grill and Mannequin Sabin in Virginia, and I did a lot of damage there, hurt a lot of people with my behavior. And I called my boss, and I said, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And I set up an appointment. I didn't just show up to the restaurant and say, hey, I'm here, I want to feel better, but I need to do this right now. I asked when a good time was going to be, and set that appointment. And I remember sitting outside in the parking lot of Sunset Grill. I was so nervous, and I was like, man. And I don't know, always before I would make my amends, I would call my sponsor, and we would pray together. We would pray together, and I would take God in there with me. And I did just that with my old employer. And after I made these amends, she just kind of laughed off. I mean, like, my amends was like, it was like when I should have been waiting tables, I was out back smoking cigarettes. I mean, she knew all this stuff anyways, but it was the truth. And when y'all weren't looking, I was, snacking off the salad bar in the back. I mean, she knew that that's what we all do, but I needed to get right with her, and I needed to get right with God. And that's that was my mission. And anytime I said I'm not too sure about that, she would remind me, oh, you said that you'd be willing to go to any length in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just would do it. And those nights set promises after making those amends and started to come true in my life. And I was starting to see God everywhere. And what that looked like for me was God would place me in a position and within my family and my friends and people around me to where I could be helpful. And that's what that looked like for me. And she's like, you're starting to experience what it means to be in alignment. And it was just the coolest thing ever. So after making some amends, I did she taught me how to do a 10th step, which keeps me on my phone with my sponsor a lot of days. But it's taught me that to go to God first is what I do throughout my day, because stuff crops up, and I mean, we're human, and I'll go to God first, and I need to talk to somebody about it, so I'll call my sponsor, and we kind of do that inventory. It's kind of a less formal way, but that's what we're doing, and she's holds nothing back, man. She'll tell me exactly how selfish I'm being, or dishonest or fearful or whatever. And after I talked to her, we decided, hey, is there any damage that's been done before you pick up the phone with me that you need to go to make amends to? And I don't wait. I do it immediately if there is. And then I redirect my thinking towards helping somebody else. It's always pray and go help someone. Pray and go help someone, because as soon as I'm reaching my hand back and helping somebody else, I'm taking the narrative off self, and 99.9% of the time it's me that's the problem. I just can't see it. So she taught me how to work 10 and 11. If I do that 10 throughout the day like I'm supposed to, rarely do I have to do a nightly inventory. But there's times when I don't catch everything through the day, and I know that when I'm in my head at night thinking about somebody, yeah, when they say this, I'm gonna say that, and that whole conversation's going on in your head, and you're like, man, I'm in collision, and there's a resentment building up, and but I have my sponsor to where if I need to go back and do a mini four, if I can, or if we can do that 11 step, then I will, and I pray in the mornings, and then I thank God at night for my sobriety on my knees every night, and in the mornings on my knees by my bed. It's not a long prayer. Like I said, I've only been sober since 2021, so I don't meditate for 3 hours in my room. But my sponsor says that's okay, because you're not going to help anybody if you're sitting in silence in your room meditating forever. So that's what that's looked like. And then by this time, I've got like 3 months, and I'm on 12, right? And she's like, you got to carry the message back to somebody. And I'm like, dude, I've got 3 months. Nobody's going to want me to sponsor them. And she's like, somebody with 24 hours is. And she said, pray for that sponsee. Pray for God to bring you that sponsee. Pray for God to bring you that sponsee. And I did. And he did. He did. I had a lot of girls from the healing place ask me to sponsor them, which was great. But they had this rule in treatment where you had to have a year. And I wasn't meeting that year. And so finally, I think they got really tired of girls going in the back and asking if Jana Brown could sponsor them. Jana Brown with 3 months, and they would always say no. And I guess finally they just said, sure, we'll let Jana Brown sponsor you. So Sharif Robinson, I was able to go up there and read the book back to her. And man, that book really started to come alive. Like the steps, it was almost like at one point I felt like my book was gonna crawl across the floor. That's how alive it was. And I was able to take her through the steps, my first one. And ever since, it's always, it always feels like, if I lose one, there's another one coming in the door. And I always say yes. And it's the highlight of my life. Like, I have a lot going on that's good now. But sponsoring other women gives me that effect produce that I used to chase when I was drinking. it lights me up. I was thinking about this the other day when we came back from Medoc, when you get plugged into God and Christmas time is approaching, so this is perfect. But it's like we all seen Christmas Vacation when Clark Griswold is trying to get the house lit up, and then finally the wife turns on the switch and it gets plugged in and the whole house lights up. That's what I feel like every cell in my body does when I reach back and help another alcoholic, whether or not it's give them a ride or be of service or carry the message in my home group. That's what happens. And like I said, it's the highlight of my life. I was not, I don't even know if I had a year yet, but this job that I was, that job that that other woman in AA had given me, I ended up being able to make amends, really, really honest, sincere amends to her as well. And I was really unhappy at this job. I really didn't like this job, and I was able to, my sponsor taught me, she said, we're not going to leave till you find something else. It's not the responsible thing to do. And so it really inspired me to really look for something else. And so that's what I did. And I was walking out of, and nothing was really hitting me. I was walking out of home group one day, and one of my old buddies from my old high school called me, and she said, "Hey, I just got the head softball job at the high school. Would you like to be my assistant?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, yes!" And so I was able to be her assistant. And with that, I needed something from 8 to 4 during the day. So I contacted the principal and asked him if they had anything at the school that I could do. I was willing to be a custodian if I needed to, a lunch lady. I didn't care. Just put me in so that I'm able to be there and then can go to practice, be your paid assistant coach after school. And he said, "Yes." He said, "I've got something perfect for you." And he said, "We have a parking lot attendant job open." And I said, "Okay." So I've got so I was able to put in a 2 weeks notice at the other job that I was at, and transition into this new job, which is a really big deal for somebody like me. Like, it doesn't sound like that, but like to actually give somebody the courtesy and respect and notice of 2 weeks is, I mean, that's a big deal. Like, it was an ordeal to even shower when I was in active addiction. And so that's what I set out to do. It didn't work out. It did not work out with the softball program, but being when the softball program led me to the basketball program, which is like my love. And it connected me with the in-school suspension teacher, who also is the head basketball coach, who is seasoned and experienced. And he offered me the job to assist him. So I set aside softball and was able to am able to do basketball with him, which starts tomorrow, and I'm really excited about it. So, if you would have asked me when I graduated high school what my dream job would have been, and I know it might sound small, but it's not the money that I'm chasing, but in my heart, I would have said, "I want to go back to my same school and give back and coach these girls." And that's exactly what God's given me the opportunity to do. And I truly believe that that's because God knew the desires of my heart. And I was willing. And so that's where I'm at now. My relationships have changed. Me and my husband just celebrated 9 years of marriage, which has been, we never really had a good foundation of marriage, and but Alcoholics Anonymous has given, and God has given me an opportunity to really to get one now and try to build on that together. What that looks like for the future, I don't know, but I know that no matter what happens, I'm gonna be okay. And my daughter is seven now, and she's so cute. She's so sweet. She knows that I go to home group every Tuesday and Thursday. She'll tell you I give her a ride to school. I'm in the school system. I'm a 10-month employee, so I get the summers paid off. My schedule aligns with her, so I'm able to be present and there with her. When there's a snow day and the school shut down, we're together. It's just been night and day from where I was at, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. My daughter, I can remember I had 6 months before I got asked to speak at my home group. And I can remember before speaking, I was so nervous, kind of like I was in the beginning here, I was, but even more nervous. And I went to my mom's house, and my mom was, she was pulling out dresses for me to try on. My sponsor taught me. She said, when you speak from the podium, you wear a dress. She was like, you honor Alcoholics Anonymous. Dale suggested I wear one, but she taught me, you wear a dress, you honor Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, two things are going to happen. You're going to speak from the podium in the dress, or you're going to get buried by your family in a dress. So you dress as if you're getting buried, because that's the alternative. You're either going to speak and serve, or you're going to die. So my mom was getting all these dresses out and jewelry for me, but it was so cool, because for the first time in a really long time, my mom wanted to be a part of something I was doing, and she was so proud and so excited for me and just wanted to be a part of it. She actually got to drive with me to Charlottesville when I spoke at the Common Solution Group and hear my story. And she's just, when we got home from visiting with Susie today, I was able to call her. She was so interested in what we did, and I was able to share that with her. We have such a beautiful relationship today. And I can remember that night before speaking, I gave my daughter a hug before I left for home group. And my daughter, she gave me this stuffed animal, and she looks at me, it's big, big blonde hair, big blue eyes. And she says, shine bright, mama. And it's just like I see God through her all the time. It's such a gift. And it was just like, man, all right, we're doing this thing. And she like loves to play with Barbies. She loves to play with Barbies, and she used to have me in the Barbie house. She has mom, dad, and then little her, right? So she used to have dad like at the grill cooking, and my husband's a great father, the girl cooking and doing all kinds of things. And she used to have mom in the bedroom, in the bed. Mom's taking a nap, mom's sleeping. Well, I've gotten out of the bed. I walked into the living room one day, and she had me sitting up in a chair, and then she had another Barbie sitting up in the other chair, and she had us like facing each other and a little table in between. And then she had a book on the table, and she's like, mama's helping somebody. And it was just like, it's been a total experience. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. I've become a leader in my family. My brother calls me when he has problems, and my sponsor really has taught me how to live an amended life. She said, you don't make a living amend. You live an amended life. You treat people the way that you've always should have treated them. And we've been able to spend a lot of time together, and she's so special to my heart. She has given, so I get so emotional. She has given so much of her time, so much of her time and her heart to me and to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is so inspiring, and I'm so grateful to be here. Thanks for taking a chance on me, Dale. And I've got my running buddy here, Tayshia, who everybody needs that buddy that when you go to pick up girls, you're like, hey, I got some girls you gotta pick up. And she's like, come over, and she'll just jump in the car and go with you. So I'm so grateful for that. It was a beautiful drive. We got to see the sunset on the mountains, and this is just so special. Thank y'all for having me.
Thank you.